I'm WBJC's Interim General Manager, Jonathan Polevsky. The end of June marks the end of our fiscal year, and I'd like to say thank you to everyone who pledged during this time to support WBJC and also everyone who listened. I thought it might be nice to say thank you by highlighting the life and work of a different composer each day until June 30th. Let's call it 30 and 30. By the way, if you didn't make a pledge, you can still be a part of our fundraising efforts this fiscal year by going to WBJC.com. He was born in 1810 in the Kingdom of Saxony, what used to be known as East Germany. His father, August, with whom he had an excellent and loving relationship, was a writer, publisher, and bookseller. From him, he inherited a lifetime love of literature and writing. In fact, during his early days, both music and words held for our composer an equal fascination. Sadly, his father died when he was 16, and the young man was left under the care of his mother and a guardian who administered his inheritance. Neither were keen that he study music, and so it was off to Leipzig to pursue law at the university. Sadly, our composer-writer spent very little time studying legal matters, preferring to improvise and compose at the keyboard and write songs and novels. At this time, he began studying piano seriously with Friedrich Wieck, a man who would have a profound influence on his life. In 1830, now aged 20, he went to Frankfurt to hear the violinist virtuoso Niccolo Paganini and wrote to his mother, "My whole life has been a struggle between poetry and prose, or call it music and law." Realizing that no amount of pressure could make her son into a lawyer, Schumann's mother relented. Our composer returned to Friedrich Wieck with even greater commitment to his keyboard studies. Wieck promised him that he could become a great virtuoso under his tutelage after a few years. In addition to piano lessons, there was something else that caught Robert Schumann's attention at the Wieck household. Wieck's daughter Clara, 9 years younger than he, was both an extraordinary piano player and an interesting person. Clara, for her part, was fascinated with the young and passionate Robert. It was not long before Clara and Robert became friends and eventually fell in love. I wish I could tell you that all was well at the Friedrich Wieck Household and Piano Academy, but that, mes petits amis, would be a lie. While Clara's piano virtuoso career was running full speed ahead, the same cannot be said for Robert Schumann. In the early 1830s, Schumann injured his right hand from either overuse or, some say, a mechanical device designed to stretch his fingers. Either way, the result was the same. Schumann was forced to give up his pianistic dreams and focus on a career in composition. Schumann would spend the rest of the 1830s writing exquisite works for piano, like his Papillon, or Butterflies, Carnival, Kreisleriana, Kinderszenen, Scenes of Childhood, and the fabulous but boringly named Fantasy in C. For Friedrich Wieck, none of this was good news. The last thing he wanted hanging around his house was a pupil who sustained a career-ending injury in his care. He also considered the virtuoso career of his daughter Clara an essential part of his financial future, and the idea of Robert Schumann as a potential son-in-law was hardly ideal. Friedrich Wieck would do everything, and I do mean everything, in his power to destroy the couple. The matter was only settled when Clara came of age in 1840 and could marry whomever she pleased. Freed of the endless legal battles with his father-in-law, Robert Schumann enjoyed one of the happiest years of his life. 1840, the year of his marriage, was also 1840, the year of song. He wrote over 100 songs, many of them for Clara. Song cycles like Dichterliebe, Poet's Love, and Liederkreis, two texts by Heine, and the stunningly beautiful Frauenliebe und Leben, Women's Life and Love, two words by Adalbert von Chamisso. If 1840 was the year of song, 1841 would be the year of the symphony. It was Clara who truly understood her husband's potential. She wrote in her diary, "It would be best if he composed for orchestra. His imagination cannot find sufficient scope on the piano. His compositions are all orchestral in feeling. My highest wish is that he should compose for orchestra. That is his field. May I succeed in bringing him to it." Clara Schumann wasn't just one of the great pianists of her time. She was a fine composer and one of the most respected musical minds of the 19th century. In this matter, like in many things artistic, she was spot on. Next year, 1842, was an extraordinary year of chamber music. During this time, he wrote 3 string quartets and the exquisite piano quintet and quartet. The piano parts were written for Clara, and when she was ill for the private premiere, Felix Mendelssohn stepped in to sight-read. The mind boggles. Here's the beautiful adagio from the piano quartet, a personal favorite. In 1844, Robert became seriously depressed, and it was felt that a change of scenery from Leipzig might help. The Schumanns moved to Dresden, and there, among other works, Robert wrote his spectacular piano concerto for Clara. It was rightly considered the finest piano concerto to be composed since Beethoven's Emperor Concerto of 1811. In 1850, Schumann accepted the position of music director in the city of Düsseldorf. It was a job he was scarcely qualified for in terms of ability or temperament. Frankly, Schumann didn't know much about conducting, and his introverted nature was ill-suited to the task at hand, leading an orchestra. At first, everyone was delighted with the Schumanns, and it was an added bonus that Robert had brought with him his wife, who also happened to be a phenomenal pianist. Eventually, the pressures of the new position and Schumann's mental illness resulted in the composer attempting suicide in February of 1854. Schumann realized he needed help and asked that he be removed to the asylum in nearby Endenich, where he would die in 1856. Lest we end on such a dismal note, there were happy times in Düsseldorf. Schumann was initially fascinated by his new surroundings, as can be seen by his fabulous tribute to the Rhineland in his Third Symphony. That's going to do it for 30 and 30, number 22. If you'd like to support WBJC's musical efforts, you can go online to WBJC.com, and I thank you.